And if you have a Bible with you, you might like to have it open at Matthew chapter 15. And then if I tail off, you'll have something decent to look at for a few minutes. I don't know what time your lunch is. I think ours is set for 12:45, so it gives me plenty of time. We're going down the road to find out what it's like there. Murray Halberg, we'll see a picture of him come up on the internet in a moment, was a very distinguished New Zealand long-distance runner. And his early love was rugby. But right from the very beginning of his rugby playing days, he suffered a serious injury. And at first it was thought that he wouldn't live, and later that he would probably be an invalid for life. But Halberg was one of those people who was dedicated to overcoming his condition. And eventually he regained his health, except that he had a slightly withered arm. And he couldn't play rugby, so he decided to turn his focus to running. And he went on to attain the world's highest honours in athletics. In 1960 at the Olympic Games, he left the world's greatest runners standing behind and won the gold medal for the 5,000 metres. At Stockholm the following year, he broke the world record for 3 miles. In 1962, he broke the world record for 2 miles. And the same year, he won the British Empire medal for the same distance. He was a man who persisted, and he achieved because he persisted against the odds. Lord Randolph Churchill once told his son Winston, who was 21 years of age at the time, that he had made a hash of everything in his life and that he would never be a success in anything. But as we know, Winston did not take his father's words lying down. In fact, he persisted against them and went on to become England's greatest prime minister. In fact, he was later elected or voted England's greatest Great Britain. Winston Churchill was one who persisted. He was one who would never give up. In his famous Blood, Sweat, Toils and Tears speech in the Second World War, he growled, "We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and the oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our islands, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender." Always throughout the conflict, Winston Churchill was there with his same bulldog determination. On one occasion, he was actually invited back to Harrow School, where he had been a pupil. And when the 5-foot-5-inch bulldog little man ascended the platform for school speech day, everyone was on tenterhooks, wondering what incredible words he was going to say. Actually, his talk was one they never forgot, because all he said was, "Young gentlemen, never give up, never give up, never give up, never, never, never." And then he sat down to the surprise of everybody. It was the shortest Founders Day's talk they had ever heard, but they never forgot it. Now, if we were going to be a great leader or a great teacher of men, I wonder what we would consider would be the most important characteristic of a great leader. Well, Winston Churchill would have said persistence. Murray Halberg would have undoubtedly said the same. And Jesus certainly would have agreed. You know, success in almost everything in this life requires that same quality of persistence. Abraham Lincoln wanted to get into politics in America. But in his effort to get elected to Congress, he was defeated in 1832, again in 1843. He was defeated again in 1855 and in 1858. But he finally succeeded in 1861 of having himself elected the 16th President of the United States. I recently listened to an academic who was giving a lecture on some of the world's greatest inventors. And one of the things that he found was that the greatest inventors were ordinary people who had an idea and they persisted until they saw it become a reality. And it's this same characteristic of persistence that is actually vital if we're going to be committed followers of Jesus. And it comes out very clearly in this encounter which we've just read from Matthew chapter 15. Because here we see Jesus, the master teacher, in action. And he's giving his disciples and this woman a lesson in persistence. Now, this meeting that Jesus had begins as follows. If you look at Matthew chapter 15, verse 21, you'll see that they were actually exhausted. And so they decided the best thing to do when they're exhausted is to take time out and to rest. And so they decided they'd go on a retreat to some place where they could find peace and quiet. We all know if you want to find peace and quiet, first thing you have to do is to get away from your mobile phone, your iPad and your PC and leave home and the workplace where people can catch you. And if possible, go somewhere where nobody will recognize you at all. So Jesus and disciples thought, well, the best thing to do is to go somewhere where we'll be absolutely free from being found out. So they decided to cross the border out of Israel to the Gentile lands of Tyre and Sidon. This was a place that they would be sure to be away from the clutches of the scribes and the Pharisees and the people of Israel. No Jews would have been likely to cross over the border into Gentile territory. They regarded it as unclean. In fact, Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, wrote that Tyre and Sidon were regarded by the Jews as, quote, one of the worst places in the eastern end of the Mediterranean. In fact, most Jews at the time thought the inhabitants there were ignorant, base, and uncultured heathens. They were the outcasts of society, and no self-respecting Jew would have thought of going to Tyre or Sidon. So far, so good. Peace at the last. But as so often happens, Sod's Law was ready and waiting to happen. And as it was in verse 22, just as they thought they had peace at the last, verse 22 says, a Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Here was a woman. She had no claim on Jesus whatsoever. She was a Gentile. She was from the despised race of the Canaanite people. They were the people of the land that the Jews were supposed to have driven out. Like Hiram, a former king of Tyre, she knew the name of David, but she went a little bit further because she even knew something about David's greater son. Lord, son of David, she cried, have mercy on me. And this is where we start to see the beginnings of this woman's wonderful persistence with Jesus. So in case you haven't got it, this is a little talk this morning about persistence and persisting with Jesus. And the first thing we see about this woman is that she persisted in the face of no answer. Some years ago, I read a lovely book. It's a classic novel called The Scarlet Letter. And it's set in 17th century Puritan New England in North America, when the colonies, the American colonies, were governed not by the magistrates, but by the Puritan elders of the local churches. And Hester Prynne is in one of those communities, and Hester has an illegitimate daughter called Pearl. And at the start of the novel, Pearl is about 6 years of age. And since her birth, her mother, Hester, has had to wear a big A engraved on the front of her dress to indicate that she is an adulterer and that everybody in the community needs to be wise and to avoid her ways. There came a day in the story when the elders of this very strict place decided that the time had come to take Esther's little daughter Pearl away and leave her in the charge and care of some godly Puritan matron who would bring her up in the catechism and warn her of the dangers of loose living. And so poor Hester Prynne is absolutely desperate to keep little Pearl. And she goes again and again to the elders pleading for them to let her keep her. And the story actually has a happy ending, because in the end, having visited all of the elders, they finally agree that she can keep little Pearl. Now, this Canaanite woman in Matthew 15, she made heartfelt pleas to Jesus in verse 22, crying out, Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter's suffering from this terrible demon possession. Unlike the more fortunate Hester Prynne, however, this Canaanite woman was only met with a stony silence. If you look at verse 22, it says, Jesus answered not a word. At this point, I've got a question to ask you. Who thinks Jesus was being rude at this particular moment in time? Can it be right to ignore someone like this poor woman crying out for help? But then, haven't all of us, if we're honest, at some time when we've just got to the end of our rope, we've just got home from work, we've just crashed out, and we're just thinking of a wonderful, nice evening by the fire, And we spot coming up the door to the front door, Mrs. Diaf. And she's got big problems, and she wants to talk to us, and she wants a word of comfort about the afterlife or something. Maybe we've met somebody, perhaps a neighbour calls just at that moment when we're really tired and her little son is out on his bike and it's getting late and she's worried. Or maybe there's someone else and they've just had a bad result from the hospital and they want to come and talk to us about it. Or maybe there's a friend down the road, they've had a terrible row with their husband and they're just desperate for someone to talk to and they come knocking at our door. But actually it wasn't like that with Jesus. It wasn't the case that he was just too tired, that he didn't answer this woman's cries, because he's the master teacher and he's wanting to teach this woman a lesson about the importance of persistence. You know, it is the case, if we're strong enough, that we can look back over our lives. We can look back over some of the hard times when we've called out for Jesus and he's been a long time answering our requests and our pleas. But we know with hindsight that he was faithful. And of course, we know from the end of this passage in Matthew 15 that there was, in the end, a good outcome for this woman. Perhaps some of us here have been praying for a long time. Perhaps you've been praying for something to happen. Perhaps you've been praying for a situation to change, for a marriage to be saved, for a person to become a Christian, and no answer has come. And then maybe you feel like saying, oh, blow this Christianity for a lark. God's just not listening to my prayers. But this woman persisted. In fact, in face of Jesus' seeming refusal to give her an answer, she still goes on crying out, Lord, have mercy on my daughter. And then the story moves on in verse 23, if you took a quick glance at it. We see a further aspect of this woman's persistence. She persisted in spite of the disciples. Not only did this poor woman seem to get a rebuff from Jesus, his disciples decided to join in a supporting role. And if you look at the second half of verse 23, it says, so his disciples came and urged Jesus, send her away because she keeps crying out after us. Significantly at this time, Josephus wrote, of the Phoenicians and the Tyrians, we have the most ill feeling towards us. So in other words, for the Jew, the Tyrians were people who didn't like them. They were hostile to them. So when the disciples said, Lord, send her away, they were only echoing what everybody else thought about the Tyrians and the Phoenicians. They were objectionable, difficult people. But here is where we see Jesus, the master teacher, in action. Not only is he giving this woman a lesson in persistence, he's also actually giving the disciples a lesson in persistence as well. And a lot of the time, the disciples just didn't get it. And here they haven't grasped that Jesus is trying to teach them by showing them this woman's wonderful persistence and urging them that they need to be the same. Now, if you were to go into a junior school classroom, perhaps, I don't know, in this village, but you would often find that the tables are arranged in the classroom in little groups, and the able learners sit on one table and the not so good learners sit on another table and the very poor learners sit on a different table. So the top readers, at first you may think it's perhaps not easy to tell, but usually the top readers and those that are good at arithmetic, they sit on the eagle or the swan table. And those who are middling about maths and scripture and reading, they sit on duck or seagull. But those who are very slow learners, they sit on the wren or the sparrow table. Now the disciples in verse 23, they are on the wren table. They're the slow learners. They just don't get what Jesus is trying to say. Now whilst we're on the subject of birds, I don't know whether you heard the story of a zoology teacher. At the end of his course, in which they'd been studying various types of birds, he decided to set an unusual exam. And so when the pupils arrived, all around the walls were just pictures of birds' legs. And the examination was, they had to identify the bird by its legs and then write what they knew about it. And when the first lad arrived in the classroom and saw the exam and the bird's legs all around the wall, he said, sir, that is an impossible examination. No one will be able to do it. And the teacher replied, do you want to do the exam or not? And he said, no, sir, I don't. So the teacher said to him, You'll have to have a zero grade. What's your name? And the kid, who was quite sharp, rolled up his trousers to the knees and said, "You tell me." The disciples were slow learners. They were the wrens when it came to getting the point about persistence. The disciples said, "Lord, send her away. She keeps crying out after us." On a more positive note, Charles Spurgeon, the great Victorian preacher, once said, "May we never be so selfish as to feel troubled by inquirers. May we never send them away ourselves by cold looks or harsh words." Sometimes, like the Canaanite woman who had to persist in spite of the disciples, we find ourselves like the woman up against the disciples, up against the religious authorities. You know, church people, church leaders, like the disciples, can be very discouraging sometimes. They sometimes remind me of the church notice board, which read, "Don't let worry kill you off, the church can help." That said, William Barclay, who was a former professor at the University of Glasgow, gave some wise words when he said, "The church may at times disappoint us, and God's servants on earth at times may disappoint us. But when we battle our way face to face with Jesus, he never disappoints us." So this Canaanite woman, although she was a Gentile unbeliever, she had remarkable persistence. She didn't give up, not a bit of it, not in the least. And here, thirdly, we see a final aspect of her persistence. She persisted with Jesus. At first, Jesus appears to endorse the dismissive attitude of his disciples. And in verse 23, it says that he answered the woman's plea, no doubt, I think, with a loud voice so that the woman could hear, "I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And when the woman heard those words, she must have been crushed, because she was a Tyrian. She was not a Jew. She was not one of God's people. She had no claim on Jesus. She was not of the house of Israel. She couldn't number herself among his sheep. So what Jesus appeared to be saying was, "Yes, I have my limits. My mission was never intended for you Gentiles, for you Tyrians." But still, she's not put off by this apparent rebuff. In fact, what Jesus is doing is drawing her out to see if she's really serious, if she's going to persist with him. And what Jesus is really doing is stretching her faith a little. And as every minute she perseveres, her faith is growing. And if you look at verse 25, it says, she came and knelt before Jesus and she said, "Lord, help me." And here Jesus tests her faith a little bit more. He says in verse 26, "It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Now, dogs were a despised animal in first century Israel. To call somebody a dog, as Jesus did here, was a very contemptuous thing. And the Jews, actually, in the first century, called the Gentiles dogs. Now, one thing we can be quite certain here, and that is that when Jesus said, "It's not right to give the children's bread and toss it to dogs," he probably did it with a right smile and a real twinkle in his eyes. It was a piece of good humor. Surely, he was saying, it can't be right to take children's bread and to toss it to Gentiles like you. Can it? Can it really be right for me, a Jew, to bestow God's blessing on you, a Tyrian Gentile? And we catch a little bit of humor if you read the Greek text, because Jesus is actually using the word for her, the word for very little dogs, doglets. The word dogs in Greek referred to the sort of wild dogs that roamed the streets and scavenged for food. But the kumaria, which is the Greek word, were little dogs, household dogs, chihuahua-type dogs that ran around the house and collected crumbs off the floor. So Jesus is testing her faith still further. She's not a dog. She's actually a Tyrian doglet. He's making fun of her. And she says in verse 27, "Yes, Lord, but even the doglets eat the crumblets which fall from the master's table." She actually joins in his banter, because not only does she use Jesus' word doglets, but she adds the Greek word crumblets. And this is bantering indeed. She knew that what she was asking was great, but one crumb of Jesus' bounty would do the trick. And Jesus loved this woman's persistence. For someone who didn't know much about Jesus, she was surprisingly strong in her faith. And she knew that Jesus could heal her daughter at once. And so she hung on until she got his answer. And in verse 28, Jesus said, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And Matthew says at the end of that little section, "And her daughter was healed that very hour." So here's a critical message, a crucial message for us. We need to follow Jesus' example and keep persisting in coming to Jesus. You know, Jesus loves persistence. It's part of the evidence of our faith. The word Islam means submission, but the word Israel means persistence. Jacob in the Old Testament was renamed Israel because of his persistence. He simply would not give up. The Lord said to him, "Because you have striven with men and striven with God and have prevailed, your name will be Israel." Israel means persistence. We are God's persistent people. And this woman was a Tyrian Gentile who the Jews regarded as the riff of society, but she is a real persister. She is a daughter of Israel. Some of you may be familiar with T.C. Hamlet's poem about persistence. It's called Two Frogs and Cream. For those of you who are theologians, I throw it in as an extra blessing. Two frogs fell into a can of cream, or so I've heard it told. The sides of the can were shiny and steep. The cream was deep and cold. "Oh, what's the use?" croaked number one. "'Tis fate, no help's around. Goodbye, my friends, goodbye, sad world." But number two, of sterner stuff, dog paddled in surprise, the while he wiped his creamy face and dried his creamy eyes. "I'll swim a while," at last he said, or so I've heard he said. "It really wouldn't help the world if one more frog were dead." An hour or two he kicked and swam, not once he stopped to mutter, but kicked and kicked and swam and kicked, then hopped out via butter. As we have already said, one of the marks of our lives, if we are followers of Jesus, is persistence. Like Winston Churchill, we must be those who never, never give up on Jesus. We are persistent, persevering, no surrender people. We journey with Jesus to the very end. If things are going wrong in our lives, we resolve not to go wrong with them. If things are going wrong with our work, with our parents, with our children, we resolve to do all that we can. We persist until we get the situation righted. We resolve to be like this Canaanite woman and go on and pestering and persevering with Jesus till we get our answer. And the message of this wonderful account of this Canaanite woman is that we must resolve to be people who don't give up. We persist in praying, in meeting with other Christians, in worshipping, in spreading in love the message that we know. We are intentional about sharing our faith. I'm coming into land shortly. There is a lesson here from Aesop's fable of the race that began between the hare and the tortoise. Slow and Steady, for that was the name of the tortoise, challenged the hare to a race, and all the animals of the forest came out to watch them. And the hare bounded off down the road, looking back, chiding the tortoise for being so slow. After a while, however, he found a comfort spot and stretched out himself and lay down and relaxed. But Slow and Steady never stopped. He persisted and plodded on till the end. And finally, all the animals gathered and cheered him home so loudly that the hare finally woke up, but realized it was too late. And there are people sometimes who get very enthusiastic for Jesus at the beginning, and they bound off into the charismatic woods or some lovely place, and there they go to sleep, but they don't persist with Jesus. Unfortunately, like Aesop's hare, they fall asleep. But we need to persist and to be a steady plodder. Have you heard of William Wilberforce? He was the man who fought the slave trade in England, and he fought it for 30 years. And during that time, he brought 519 petitions to Parliament against slavery before finally in 1807, the House of Commons voted against slavery. In the gym, where Anne and I go from time to time, not as much as we should, there are written on the words on the wall some words of Martin Luther King. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep going forward. Jesus said on several occasions that we need to be those who endure to the end. And if you're keen on sport, like me, you'll know that many great matches are lost or won in extra time. So we need to keep going, especially if we're in extra time. I've always loved these words from Charles Wesley's hymn, and with this I close. It comes from his hymn, Jesus the Name High Over All, the very last verse. Happy if with my latest breath I might but gasp his name, preach him to all, and cry in death, behold the Lamb. And cry in death, behold the Lamb. What a cracker. Well, dear lovely friends, we need to be those who persist and persist with Jesus to the end of our time. Amen.